This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, where we celebrate this holiday by taking a look at one of the true mysteries in the whole course of human history. The mystery of why it was that colonists in North America in the 1760s and 1770s, colonists who were well-fed and who drank a good deal and were wealthy by the standards of the time, who lived really in some of the happiest circumstances of any people who had ever drawn breath in the history of the planet up to that time, why these privileged colonists were willing to risk everything on what seemed to be fairly picayune points of taxation. We're taking a look at the coming of the American Revolution, why they fought. One of the most important things to remember is that it was not the colonists, not the patriots, not the so-called revolutionaries who initiated the change. As a matter of fact, they were responsible mostly for resisting the change. The huge distance between England and North America meant that there couldn't be day-to-day control by the king or by parliament of everything that happened in individual colonies. In fact, there couldn't be control by any central authority even in the colonies at that time. Transportation, communication was simply too difficult. So it was inevitable that local authority would spring up. And the local authority had sprung up in North America, and a group of leaders had empowered themselves, had been empowered, and perfectly fine with the authorities in London. Colonial assemblies, the House of Burgesses in Virginia, the State Assembly in Massachusetts, throughout the colonies, these local leaders were controlling events. And all of a sudden, after the French and Indian War, it was the British who were trying to change things. It is always easier to fight to preserve a life that you love, to preserve a status quo that seems worthwhile, than it is to get people to fight and sacrifice to try to realize some new vision. One of the important things to keep in mind about this whole revolutionary struggle and the long lead up to it was that the people who made the revolution were fighting to keep things as they were. There's a beautiful passage about all of this that sums up the way the situation was before the American Revolution and the events leading to it. It's a passage written by my long-ago professor of colonial history at Yale, Edmund S. Morgan, who's really one of the best writers on this anywhere. And what he writes is, the government of Great Britain hadn't been designed to cover half the globe. And when Englishmen were not busy extending their possessions still farther, they were apt to regard the problem of turnpikes in Yorkshire as vastly more important than the enforcement of the Navigation Acts in New York. Administration of the colonies was left to the king, who turned it over to his Secretary of State for the Southern Department, whose principal business was England's relations with Southern Europe. The secretary left it pretty much to the Board of Trade and Plantations, a sort of chamber of commerce with purely advisory powers. The Board of Trade told the secretary what to do. He told the royal governors. The governors told the colonists. And the colonists did what they pleased. That was the status quo, and it was fine with everybody. The British Empire, writes Professor Morgan, however inefficient its management, was very much a going concern. And wise men on both sides of the Atlantic believed that its success was intimately connected with the bumbling way in which it was run. Freedom, inefficiency, and prosperity are not infrequently found together, and it is seldom easy to distinguish between the first two, freedom and inefficiency. It was this desire to suddenly make the British Empire more efficient that led to all kinds of difficulties. It seemed, for a while at least, that those difficulties might be cleared up a bit when the Stamp Act was repealed. And there was celebration throughout the colonies. It was considered to be an absolutely great and brilliant and wonderful victory for all of the colonists. They had demanded the Stamp Act be removed. One of the reasons that was considered so obnoxious was because it put a special tax on all legal documents. And one of the things about North America at that time was it was a very much the most lawyer-ridden society in the world. And one of the things that British visitors noted whenever they came to the colonies was how busy the courts were. There were constant lawsuits back and forth. And lawyers, especially top lawyers in Boston, like John Adams, for instance, could make a lot of money. They could make £3,000 to £4,000 a year, which was compared with a top carpenter who would make £90 a year. So you have some idea how well they would do. Meanwhile, a school teacher, £30 a year, about a third as much as a carpenter. So you can see that this underpayment of schoolmasters is not a new thing in America. The president of Yale College got £150 a year, just a bit more than a carpenter. In any event, the celebration of the Stamp Act repeal actually swept all of the colonies. In New York, they put up a statue. Well, it was out of lead, but it was still a statue of George III. Put it right up on Bowling Green and celebrated and danced around it and praised the young king who had seen the Stamp Act repealed. In Boston, people celebrating the repeal carried an enormous transparent pillar that was made out of oiled paper. And they had fires inside it that didn't burn the paper, candles. So it was like a Japanese lantern. And there were 300 lamps inside this huge oiled paper tower. And it was covered with symbolic pictures and patriotic verse, all praising King George and Parliament and declaring how eternally people wanted to be part of the British Empire. The only problem was that Parliament didn't welcome this idea of retreating on the Stamp Act, and particularly the King didn't welcome it, because he was convinced that unless England asserted its authority to tax the colonists, then that authority would be lost forever. And part of what happened is that a new Chancellor of the Exchequer, that's the equivalent of Secretary of the Treasury, was empowered in London, in Parliament. And it was none other than Champagne Charlie, Charles Townsend, the man about town and dandy and drunk who had gotten involved with a very bitter exchange on Parliament with Colonel Isaac Barré, who had ended up coining the phrase Sons of Liberty. In any event, Champagne Charlie decided that the best way to make up for the revenue that England wasn't getting because the Stamp Act was gone was to introduce a whole bunch of new taxes on lead, on glass, on paint, on tea, and dozens of other substances. And part of what he was basing this on, the Townsend duties, named after Champagne Charlie himself, was the idea that England had accepted the notion, okay, we don't have the right to tax the Americans internally because they don't vote for Parliament. But we certainly have a right to control their trade, and these are external taxes. They are duties. But they were duties for the purpose of revenue, and they were tremendously, heatedly opposed by colonists everywhere. And part of the reason they opposed them, you can see with one of the other things that Champagne Charlie did, Charles Townsend. He was very eager to be popular in England, so he put through a huge tax cut on the land tax for the English. But now watch. You see, what he did was give a tax break to people who voted for Parliament while putting new tax burdens on people who didn't. This was exactly what the Americans felt tremendously frightened about. The idea that if you can't vote for people, if you don't vote on their future, and they didn't vote, they didn't send members to Parliament, was simply too far away, then you have absolutely no control. You are a slave. And actually, Professor Pauline Mayer at Massachusetts Institute of Technology makes a very good point. One of the examples that they could use was Ireland. Ireland at the time was terribly oppressed by the English. They didn't want to be in the position of Ireland, to be oppressed by the mother country in this way. The conflict intensified on the road to revolution.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. For a complete list of history shows, visit MedvedHistoryStore.com.
Washington Policy Center, WPC, is Washington State's champion for free market reforms and is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. It's led the effort against state and local income taxes. Its research and policy analysis are relied on by lawmakers, media, and citizen activists for accuracy, fresh perspective, and to expose the political manipulation of data. Our state needs WPC more than ever, and we need you to be part of it. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. Is our country's distinctive power and prosperity the product of some happy accidents or criminal activity, or is it God's hand on America? That's the title, actually, of my most recent book. You can get a hardcover copy, personally signed by me, together with a full audiobook, and it comes to you together with an MP3 player so you can hear it anytime you want. It's all at a reduced price while supplies last. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for God's Hand on America, look for that audiobook and hardcover book bundle.
Now's the time to join the millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. MyPillow is now offering a BOGO extravaganza on multiple MyPillow products. Right now, get buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillows, six-piece towel sets, and roll and go anywhere MyPillows, and yes, so much more. Just go to the Radio Listener's Specials page at MyPillow.com and use the promo code MEDVED. That's MyPillow.com, promo code MEDVED, or call 1-800-320-6280. That's 800-320-6280. Don't miss this incredible BOGO extravaganza at MyPillow.com. Buy one, get one free on select products. Remember, that's promo code MEDVED or 1-800-320-6280.
I'm about to give you a life-changing URL that if you will simply visit it and give these tax consultants a call, it will change your life. Whether you're a blue-collar worker, or whether you're a school teacher, or whether you're a scientist, or whether you're a millionaire, almost no one out there is taking advantage of legal, lawful tax loopholes. Go to gcntaxcut.com. It takes you right to American Tax Solutions, and they will give you an amazing preview of what they can do for you. gcntaxcut.com, gcntaxcut.com.
Here's a question for you. Why is it that some people aren't as stressed out about the future as you'd think they'd be? Answer? They're probably among the millions of Americans who have prepared themselves with emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. If the worst ever happens, literally millions of American families are already protected from dealing with empty store shelves. Is yours? If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now and grab some emergency food kits, at least one for each member of your family. These kits give you a wide variety of delicious meals that average over 2,000 calories per day. Everything stays fresh for up to 25 years in storage. Order your kits now by going to MyPatriotSupply.com. Your order will ship fast and arrive discreetly in unmarked boxes. Listen, this is something you need to jump on now, before the next news headline stuns the world. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
No, it is not easy to explain the motivations of the people who made the American Revolution, who fought our long, painful, terribly bloody war for independence. When we talk about tyranny in the 20th century, Obviously, what we have in mind is some of these most monstrous nightmare regimes in the history of human beings. Regimes like communist Russia or Nazi Germany. England in the Revolution, despite what the movie The Patriot might suggest, wasn't at all like that. In fact, England in many ways remained by far the most enlightened, the most honest, the most just of all major powers in the world. The problem for the Americans was they just felt they were better. And they were right. If you take a look at some of the response of the American colonists to the duties, to the taxes that the English tried to put on them, you can't understand that response unless you realize that circumstances were completely different in the colonies than they were back home in England. In England, very few people owned property. Only the elite owned property. In fact, property qualifications were so restrictive that in 1760, only 219,000 Englishmen had the right to vote out of some 8 million. That's a tiny percentage. 1 in 40 people who lived in England had the right to vote. In America, it was very different. I mean, we look today at the situation in colonial America and say, well, how could it be? They only allowed property owners the ability to vote. But the truth of the matter is that most people owned enough property to qualify to vote. In fact, some people suggest that as many as 70% of colonists owned enough property so that they had the franchise, that they were able to vote. Now, of course, that did not include, left out of all of that, is the 20% of the North American colonies that was black. I mean, there were a great many slaves. The percentage of black people living in America at the time was higher than the percentage of black people living in America today. And by the way, some of those black people, about 20% of that 20%, were freed Negroes who were artisans, who participated in the economy, and some of whom owned slaves themselves. But that is another story. The truth of the matter is that they had built a society in nearly all of the colonies that was very different from any other society in the history of the world. First of all, there were only two towns that were over 20,000 people in all of North America. One of them was Philadelphia, which was the metropolis of the entire continent. With about 45,000 population, it was the second biggest city, English-speaking city, after London. And then there was Boston, which had, during this period, between 18 and 22,000 people. It was basically a small town. But 95% of all Americans lived on farms or in very remote communities, in communities less than 2,500 population. So you're not talking about a lot of townspeople. What you are talking about is wealth being dispersed widely enough so that 40% of the people were independent farmers who lived in considerable comfort. A typical northern farmer owned 10 head of cattle, 16 sheep, 6 pigs, 2 horses, and a team of oxen. And he was usually able to sell 40% of the crops that he grew for cash. Now, that was a pretty good life, particularly compared to the way that other people lived at that time. There was a visitor to North America from Sweden, about 1750, who reported, quote, "Every countryman, even the poorest peasant, has an orchard with apples, peaches, chestnuts, walnuts, cherries, quinces, and such fruits. And sometimes we saw vines climbing in them. The valleys were frequently blessed with little brooks of crystalline water. The fields by the side of the road were almost all mown." What was amazing was that though the North American colonies had a population of only 2.6 million, including the 20% who were slaves, and England had a population of 8 million, North America produced economically almost half as much as England. And in fact, people who looked at it and looked at the industry and the productivity and the amazing success of the American economy actually predicted that before long, perhaps as soon as 1800, those American colonies would be outproducing the mother country. That was part of the reason that people like Chancellor of the Exchequer, Champagne Charlie Townsend, Charles Townsend, seemed to have actual resentment to the Americans. They were privileged. They were doing well. And how well were they doing? Well, one of the things that absolutely has gotten my attention is the amount of meat they consumed. In 1784, now that's after the Revolution, but the statistics would basically apply before the Revolution too, one farm family of four in Watley, Massachusetts, ate 500 pounds of pork and 200 pounds of beef, which comes out to roughly a half a pound of meat a day per person. That was typical, not exceptional. Henry Adams, writing about the colonists, talked about the desire to eat pork three times a day. It was considered an essential part of the American diet, nearly as important as drinking hard cider and rum. President Washington, at his home in Mount Vernon, usually served fish, fowl, and a roast at every dinner. And a good tavern meal would consist of two roasts or two kinds of fowl or all of the above at every meal. Now, the result of all of this was, well, it was a high-protein diet. And because of that protein-rich diet, American men of the 1700s were, according to Army records, about as tall as they are today, an average of a little bit over 5'8", which made them 2 to 3 inches taller than their counterparts back in England. With all of that, there was a great deal of confidence, a great deal of a sense of, yes, we can do it, when it came to resisting the latest attempt of the English to squeeze money out of the colonists. What was so obnoxious about the Townshend Acts was not simply the amount of money they were trying to take, but the way they were trying to take it. The main thing that the colonists objected to was not the money itself. It was the idea that somebody who was found guilty of avoiding these duties on glass, on lead, on painter's colors, on paint, paper, and tea, somebody was accused of that, wouldn't be tried in front of a jury. He'd be tried in front of an admiralty court, where he would have very little chance of getting acquitted. Provision alone made them angry, but in addition to that, the Townshend Acts set up boards of customs commissioners under direct British control, which allowed searches by customs officials in homes, as well as on ships and in stores and in offices. And most objectionable of all, what this all set up was a situation whereby, from now on, the governors and the judges and the local officials would not be paid by colonial assemblies. They would be paid through the collection of these duties. In other words, England was taking over local administration. This was intolerable. A number of leaders sprang forward to argue against it, to organize resistance, to make the British merchant class pay, to try to get the Townshend duties repealed, just as they had with the Stamp Act. Their success was more than could be imagined.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of The Michael Medved Show. For more history programs, go to medvedhistorystore.com or become a medhead at michaelmedved.com and check out our new history podcast for premium members called In Light of History.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast? We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At GCNteam.com, we have a healthy blood sugar pack, focusing on the structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg. At least 6 people are dead and over 24 are wounded after a person opened fire at a 4th of July parade in the Chicago suburb of Highland Park. Police are still searching for the suspect, who is still at large, and evidence of a firearm has been recovered. Highland Park Mayor Nancy Rotering is praising those who helped the victims and spectators.
I want to pause and thank the first responders who ran towards the danger to render aid during this active shooter situation. We saw individuals who responded selflessly and put themselves at risk to save others.
There are thousands of brand new American citizens as of right now. In celebration of Independence Day, U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services welcomes more than 660,000 new citizens. USA Radio News.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Extendivite really works. Here's just a few testimonials from Amazon. Patricia, excellent herbal formula. I use Extendivite to keep my cardiovascular system fine-tuned. Brian, I'm using Extendivite, and for me, it has made a world of difference. God made all these nutrients in the ground. Enough said. Cammy, 5 stars. I feel a lot of energy since I started taking Extendivite. TR, 5 stars. All I can say is, Extendivite works. Buy it, try it, and see for yourself. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Why they fought, we're taking a look at the events and the decisions that led up step by step to the American Revolution and to the War for Independence. And part of what needs to be understood is that our forefathers in the North American colonies were different from their English cousins, partially because they so clearly understood the value of money. Now, the English also understood money. I mean, remember, Napoleon once supposedly referred to England as a nation of shopkeepers and meant that very derisively. But in America, it was different. Because in England, you could be a very popular person, you could have a lot of prestige if you had the right background, the right family background, if you had the right noble title. It didn't matter if you were deeply in debt. In fact, Parliament and the government was full of all kinds of aristocratic sots who had squandered family fortunes and had no money. But America was all about money. You could come to America, like George Washington's family did about 100 years before this time, and not have a lot of money and earn some and become a leading family. Everything was based upon money. It was a much more open society. And as a result, people spoke about money far more openly. There was considered to be nothing disgraceful about understanding the value of money. What's interesting is when you look at newspaper accounts of weddings. And this really absolutely knocked me out. There is one, Elizabeth Stith of Virginia, for instance, who is a bride, who was described as, quote, a very amiable lady with a fortune of £1,000. That's what the wedding announcement stipulated. Can you imagine someone doing that today? These folks were not embarrassed to talk about money as a motivation for people and as a reflection of their hard work. March 15th, 1771, the Virginia Gazette announced, "Yesterday was married in Henrico, Mr. William Carter, third son of Mr. John Carter, age 23, to Mrs. Sarah Ellison, relict, that means widow, of Mr. Gerald Ellison, aged 85, a sprightly old tit with 3,000 pounds fortune." There's pretty clear motivation there. Money mattered. And that's why, because of the recognition of money representing what people worked hard for, what they saved for, what they built for, and representing a family's future, that the attack on the taxing power by the British Parliament, not by the king so much, because the king was behind the scenes. He was a figurehead largely. Yes, he was involved in events, and he could have shaped events one way or another. But it was the parliamentary leadership, corrupt and careless, that pushed forward this arrogant policy that was absolutely designed to bring the American colonists to heel and to squeeze them for money. And they resented it. And the opposition to the Townshend Acts, with its house-to-house searches if necessary, its abrogation of what people considered to be their most essential rights, the rights to trial by jury, for instance, that opposition became extremely intense. Partially because, with the Stamp Act crisis a couple of years before, the Americans had seen that they could win if they stuck together. If they were strong enough in their opposition, they were confident that they could get Parliament to withdraw these obnoxious acts. Some of the leaders, the intellectual leaders of the opposition, James Otis, a brilliant but eccentric lawyer in Boston, he was credited with originating the phrase, "Taxation without representation is tyranny." That was the essence of the colonial cause. And then there was a guy, John Dickinson, in Pennsylvania, who was a very top lawyer, very wealthy. And he had actually been trained as a lawyer in England. And he came back and he wrote a series of letters that were actually newspaper columns called Letters from a Pennsylvania Farmer. Now, he was no Pennsylvania farmer. He wasn't a simple guy. He was one of the slickest, most powerful lawyers in the colonies. But all of these documents argued passionately about the need to respect liberty and independence, the ability of people to vote for their own representatives who alone would have the power to tax them and to take their property, to take their money, which meant everything. Because property, especially property that you owned, real property, was the essence of dignity in colonial America. Part of what happened here is the resistance was so strong that the governor of Massachusetts called for British troops. There were troops on the frontier up to this point, but now he needed troops in Boston, he felt, to protect him against mob activity in the spirit of resistance. And those troops led to a bloody confrontation that just a few years later would end up bringing about the revolution. We'll talk about the Boston Massacre coming back.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. In a revealing letter to the Ethicist column in the New York Times Magazine, a Bay Area renter asked for moral guidance on handling his landlord. He described the man as a nice guy, providing a below-market rental, but the correspondent felt uncomfortable when he saw a Christian magazine in his landlord's mail, with cover stories that suggest LGBTQ rights are undermining religious freedom, and others about the dangers of educating children about gender diversity. End quote. While acknowledging that destroying his landlord's mail would violate the law, the perplexed tenant asked, is it more ethical to give him this magazine and perpetuate hate and inequality, or to occasionally just lose this piece of mail once a month? This inquiry shows the less powerful urge to censor what neighbors read or think. It also displays the breathtaking arrogance and intolerance that lead more and more Americans to fear and resent the strident left with its toxic role in the culture. I'm Michael Medved.
When you look at the long process of misunderstanding and disagreement and irrepressible conflict that led up to the American Revolution, you can see arguments on both sides, can't you? From the British side, there was the sense that, after all, these American colonists have benefited from their association with the mother country. We started these colonies. We protected them in the French and Indian War. We won the war. Now they should pay. And they must obey the law, like everyone else in the British Empire. People in the colonies, particularly the obstreperous colony of Massachusetts, were refusing to obey the law. So naturally, the Friends of Government, as British sympathizers were called, would go ahead and call for redcoats, for troops, for stationing troops right in Boston, and for an obnoxious piece of work called the Quartering Act, which would force Massachusetts families to take these redcoats into their own homes. Meanwhile, you could understand the American point of view as well, because here was a sense where we had a functioning colonial assembly, we fought hard in this war alongside the British, the French and Indian War, and now we are being told we have no say, and our elected representatives have no say, in terms of tax policy. They're taxing us from London, they're collecting the taxes, and they're paying not just the army troops who are among us, but the judges and the magistrates and the governors and the customs commissioners and the other officials. We have no control over any of these people. No wonder that Americans worried about what they called a future of slavery. All of this was really brought to a head in the city of Boston by the arrival of a number, several hundred, about 600 actually, of His Majesty's troops. These troops were not popular. They did nothing to make themselves popular. They were rough, low-life type folks. They made a habit of offending the Puritan sensibilities of Boston, because every Sunday, the Blessed Sabbath in the colony of Massachusetts, they would use Sunday for band practice and for drilling during religious meetings, marching up and down and shouting outside, just basically to annoy people. They also were noted for their rude and aggressive behavior with some of the maidens of the town, and general drunkenness, chasing after women, and worst of all, competing with loyal Bostonians for jobs. Why? Because the pay of British soldiers was so pathetic that it was just taken as a given that those soldiers, who didn't have that much to do, just being basically stationed in Boston to try to intimidate people, they had time for doing odd jobs.
You're listening to a special history broadcast of the Michael Medved Show. For a complete list of history shows, visit medvedhistorystore.com.
I had pain in my hands that kept me from work and doing projects around the home. I heard about Relief Factor on the radio and began taking it, and it left me with pain-free hands again. I was able to do the things around the house that I enjoy doing. I'm so glad I found Relief Factor.
This is a dietary supplement. It is totally natural. I wouldn't be without it. I take it every day. It's gotten me through the hard days of winter and pandemic and more, and helps you feel better, whether it's aches and pains or Relief Factor can help. It's made from natural products, including turmeric and fish oil, that is all blended together in a proprietary blend that actually works for people around the world. It's a great product. You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. Go to michaelmedved.com and just click on the banner for Relief Factor. Don't you get tired of commercials screaming at you to buy gold right now with inflated promises on future values? In an unregulated industry, you need honest, real experts to give you solid advice to protect your wealth and give you top picks, too, on the best coins and bullion based on real-time data and historical trends. For example, as environmental policy becomes a hot topic, one precious metal that's been significantly undervalued for years is potentially set to surge. Nick Rovich, owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion, has long recommended this precious metal. Up to 600,000 ounces of this rare metal will be needed by 2030 to produce green hydrogen. Nick is doubling down on this pick, and you should, too. Call Nick to find out more. Now, I've been friends with Nick for several years, and he's my go-to guy when it comes to coins and bullion. I trust him. You can, too. Call Nick at 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com. 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. shopsupertea.com.
To order this show or other history shows, go to medvidhistorystore.com.
So there was a place in the city, what was called a rope line, where people would normally come to hire folks. And very often, the Redcoats would come in full uniform, and they would undercut. They would offer their work for a lower price than the local colonists required. On Friday, the 2nd of March, 1770, with Boston in the grip of all of this controversy concerning the Townshend Acts and the Quartering Act, a group of British soldiers from the 29th Regiment went to the rope walk to try to get some of this part-time work. And one of the workers at the rope walk spoke to one of those soldiers, whose name was Private Patrick Walker, that if he wanted work, you can go and clean my, and he used the term S house, but he didn't say it politely. The soldier lost his temper, not wanting to clean out anybody's S house. So he dashed forward and was about to engage in a fight, and he was knocked down. Now soon, where this brawl is going on, eight or nine other soldiers of his regiment showed up, and they started wielding clubs and challenged the workers to come out and fight them. The workers, who greatly outnumbered them, rushed out, and the workers chased the soldiers off. But this caused seething resentment, which exploded three evenings later. Now this is March. It's Boston. There's thick snow underfoot that just had a winter storm. And what happened was there was another fight between redcoats and gangs of young men of the town. And that was stopped by the officers of the regiment. But after a fire bell had been rung, lots of people turned out into the streets. It's the middle of the night. A fire bell had been rung. There's fighting going on and brawling going on. All of a sudden, there's a big mob. 100 people, maybe more. And many of the people in that mob had planks that they had taken from a demolished butcher's stall. And they had clubs and bats that they had been using for playing the game of tip-tat, which was sort of an ancestor of the game of baseball. Meanwhile, there are more fire bells. Fire engines were being pushed along the streets, not because there was any fire, but because there was all this excitement. Scores of apprentices were running through the snow, shouting threats at the British soldiers, lousy rascals, the scoundrel lobster's sons of... dot, dot, dot. They came up to the custom house, which was, of course, the most hated symbol of British authority. And at the custom house, there was a lone sentry standing guard in his box. It's cold night. There's snow everywhere. And the crowd gathered and started throwing snowballs, icicles, and lumps of ice from frozen gutters at this one sentry. The sentry fixed his bayonet, put the blade on top of his musket, and then loaded his musket, striking the butt threateningly on the ground. And the crowd said, "Fire, damn you, fire, fire and be damned, you coward." Meanwhile, a detachment of soldiers, their bayonets fixed, marched at double time through the streets in the moonlight to try to relieve this poor sentry, having heard that he was in trouble. They were under command of a sensible 40-year-old Irishman named Captain Thomas Preston. Preston ordered his men to load their muskets, but having done so, they just stood there, while the Boston youths, with sticks in their hands, continued to shout insults and continued to throw things. And meanwhile, what happened was eventually the firing began. There was no order by Captain Preston to fire. But still, five people were killed, three of them immediately, others wounded, two of them died of their wounds. A sailor from Salem later recalled, "Immediately after the principal firing, I saw three of the people fall down in the street. Presently, after the last gun was fired off, the officer who commanded the rascals sprung before them, waving his sword or stick, and said, 'Damn ye rascals, what did you fire for?' And he struck up one of the guns. Nevertheless, the soldiers were arrested and faced trial for murder." Tell you what happened coming back.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. New research in the health sciences indicates that making a point of regularly expressing gratitude can bring numerous benefits in physical and emotional health. Robert Emmon, psychology professor at University of California, Davis, declares that gratitude enhances performance in every domain that's been examined: psychological, relational, emotional, physical. Asking research subjects to regularly write down reasons for thankfulness in a daily gratitude journal appears to bring immediate results. A study at University College London showed better sleep quality and lower blood pressure after just 2 weeks of keeping gratitude journals. With a nation painfully afflicted by an epidemic of deaths of despair involving suicides, drug overdoses, and alcoholism, thankfulness may provide a promising antidote, offering an alternative to our current culture of complaint, competitive victimization, and indulgent self-pity. Taking time for thankfulness instead of indulging anger and indignation may be good for your health and the nation's. I'm Michael Medved.
The Boston Massacre, March 5th, 1770. The bloodiest day leading up to the American Revolution. Bloody with five people killed. One of them, the most famous of them, Crispus Attucks, was black. He was a runaway slave from Framingham, Massachusetts. He was part Natick Indian. He had worked as a sailor for 20 years. He was leading the attack on the British soldiers in front of the customs house. With clubs and staves, he lay dead. And all of the people who were killed by the British became martyrs to the colonial cause. There was a famous engraving by Paul Revere, silversmith in the city of Boston, that showed the British firing without provocation. Of course, they had a great deal of provocation. And it turned out that they needed a lawyer, a local lawyer, to defend them. And they got the best. They got the best lawyer, arguably, in the entire colony of Massachusetts. His name was John Adams. Yeah, that John Adams. And he worked together with Josiah Quincy, and they ended up getting acquittals, getting all of the seven soldiers and their commander acquitted on charges of murder. Two of the soldiers were convicted of manslaughter charges. The result of the manslaughter charges was they had a brand on their thumb with the letter M on it, and then they were returned to their regiments. So there was justice for the soldiers of the Boston Massacre, but it didn't prevent this entire episode from greatly inflaming colonial opinion. The Paul Revere engraving circulated everywhere, another famous engraving showing the five coffins. And in fact, in Massachusetts, for some 50 years after the Boston Massacre, that day, March 5th, was observed as a solemn day, as something of a patriot holiday. John Adams actually lost a good deal of his local popularity to his much more radical cousin, Sam, a manipulator and a penniless failure at everything, except a great success in shaping colonial opinion. Sam Adams had the idea that independence was necessary. He had that idea in advance of nearly everybody else in North America, and he worked toward that goal resolutely and determinedly, exploiting the memory of the Boston Massacre for that purpose. The irony of the whole thing was the same day that the five people were killed in Boston, that was the day that back in Parliament in England, they got rid of the hated Townsend duties. Parliament backed down again. Champagne Charlie Townsend lay dead. He was no longer Chancellor of the Exchequer. He died of the flu at age 41 and was buried in a fancy and colorful suit of clothes. And now there was the sense by the King and his new minister, Chief Minister, Lord North, that trying to squeeze the colonies for money simply wasn't worth it. So what they did was said, okay, we're going to get rid of all of the Townsend duties except one, the duty on tea. But that led to more fateful footsteps in the direction of revolution and independence.
To purchase this show, go to MedVidStore.com or call 855-880-7206. That's 855-880-7206. MedVidStore.com.
This is Michael Medved for Townhall.com. A new analysis from the Harvard School of Public Health reports on a powerful pattern of behavior that produces substantial benefits in terms of increased longevity, enhanced physical and emotional well-being, and especially greater marital stability. Confirming many other previous studies, Professor Tyler J. Vanderweel shows that those who attend religious services regularly suffer much lower rates of early mortality, depression, and divorce, reporting higher levels of marital and personal satisfaction. He doesn't speculate about the supernatural efficacy of prayer, but Vanderweel's research does cite the communal support provided by religious institutions and the impact of faith-based teachings in encouraging us to value the welfare of others. In this holiday season, when even the unchurched like to show up for services, the Harvard study shows that public worship can bring benefits during the rest of the year as well. I'm Michael Medved.
Hey, this is Rockstar Greg with the Michael Medved Show. Thanks for listening to the special history broadcast. If you want even more content from Michael Medved, go to our website, michaelmedved.com, and consider becoming a Medhead. There's so much content available. The 3-hour daily broadcast, commercial-free, hundreds of commentaries, 2 new podcasts, and lots more. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on the Medhead subscription and become a member. Thanks for listening in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Hi, everyone. This is Fred Dreyer for Balance7.com. Do you have acid indigestion? You can't eat the foods you like? Your stomach is upset all the time? Chronic pain a problem? Then do yourself a favor and go to Balance7.com. Start living again and get rid of chronic pain. Balance 7 has all the natural ingredients that work to rid your body of inflammation. I take it every day to keep my inflammation and acid indigestion in check. Remember, a sick body is an acid body. So, get rid of your acid indigestion and inflammation with Balance7.com. Call 800-793-9039. That's 800-793-9039. 800-793-9039 or go to balance7.com. That's balance, the number 7.com.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.